what we do with land. What can we do? Map those acres on the sky. To offer this land to heaven and see what comes. Tree and bush and spring and rock, the geology of God offered to itself. This thing wants art. What is art? Art is doing for the first time what was never done. Art is the completion of the unbegun. Just like a field, it goes on into the sky, unbroken. Horizon is a kind of breath around the visible, keeps us in our place, our lovely place, this girl of earth, this boy of time, knowing their way through us. Kung has confusions. Kung, the master and sack. So begins the Xiangqing, the classic of being small, of feeling like a child. The classic of being small, of feeling filial, how to be a child of everything. All we need is a place to sit. The master said, sat, taught us that a chair is what divides us from the beasts. Foxes squat, birds fold their wings, humans sit down on wooden chairs. The ancestors invented them, set them in place. Humans live in places. They set above us a small heaven made of wood or rush or tile. All we need is place. 28 phases of the moon, each moon an acre, each man a chair. Suppose a man invents a chair and builds a house to put it in. Where shall he put his house? The first letter of the Bible is B, Beth, a house. We spell it Beth, like a woman's name. Make a woman's name of it. Aleph, Beth. Because a house comes first. Right after breath. But where does it rest, this house in the air, this house breathed out by someone beginning a book, beginning a world? There has to be a field to put it in, field of our attention. Grass and rocks and bushes stretch out. How close the horizon is, that snake or the outskirts of the sky. Grass and rocks and roots and trees and God knows what, leaf fall and rubbish of 5,000 years since the glacier slept its way through our town, since people came along, these animals leave debris behind. That's how you know it's we who are here. So, leave it to a man who builds a house to try to put the sky right on the ground. 28 phases of the ancient moon. The eights knew them and spoke their names. We know them as the days we keep, the nights full of answers. And in June, there will be fireflies and lovers hidden in deep grass. We'll watch them and each other's skin light up those briefest of all candle flames. 1 acre must always stay empty to make a house for the full moon. That shows itself so clearly, and by doing so, shows us everything else. Full moon on snow. I should say, when I first saw these acres, it was in deep snow. So everything else was an inference of what lay below the snow. The master sat. The disciples waited, as the master seemed also to be waiting. Presently, he closed his eyes, then opened them again, saying, "Did you hear that?" Did you hear the full moon standing naked in the sky? It made a sound like a bronze shield being beaten by a strong arm. Didn't you hear it? Then it whispered like spring rain, did you? And the disciples wept, hearing nothing but the crickets in the trees. The crickets in their little wooden cages, nothing but their own sighs. There is a field where all of this is true. That's why we have to walk on all the acres, ivy and sometimes up there, rare raven Charles Stein heard rasping years ago, not far southeast of here, where the last raid of the Pequots struck out our peaceful local tribe. And the raven saw that too. Now we have to listen hard, walk the sounds of the place, the nearsighted spice bush, first to win and last to lose its green. The master asked, why did you come here? And we answered, to see this, the sky from this place and no other. And he said, yes, good children, because every place on earth has its own special view of the sky, that is its chamber. Only there can you know where you are. Only by looking up and seeing where the light comes from, precisely, and where it falls. He told us we can know a place only by reference to something else, just as we discern one another only by likeness and difference. That's so obvious. Tell us something we don't know. Rattle the tiles on our roof. Sprinkle garnet gravel on our skin. All right, we have to go there. We have to get hurt by the physics of it, be poisoned by its chemistry, stumble on its rocks, swoon into its grasses, then come away and understand. Oh, leave the land alone, our empty field, the loveliest palazzo, an empty page, most honest poetry. Thank you. Going. If you ever get there, where I have been once or twice before, running in summers with no sleep, under iron bridges they eddy around me, curve of black willow bank around me lying at bottom, looking up at the river's skin, shadows of fish in the sun and no whispers, under wooden bridges, rumbling under the fords, sifting dust into that coolness of underbridge, striped with sunlight. God, I love you all and don't want you to be there under the blue skin, itching in shallow grass. No thought in your minds but to measure those distances, counting in pores of sunburnt skin. And tell me you're there, in inches, in feet, and how very far away, easily, that much further away. And then from a long poem called Spiritum, that was my first experiment in writing long poems, and I've disgraced myself with dozens of long poems ever since, and burdened the critical attention. This is an excerpt from a poem called Spiritum. To begin the preliminaries of geography, know where things are. If you live in a red room in the cave, and your body moves violently in your blood, and your rhythm is the sun's reflection, and I visit you in the red room, see fires burning beyond the window, rose bushes flowering all at once. If you live in a blue room and move the sun with your right breast, the moon from your left breast, and cup your pubis for the hair of comets and fish, and I visit you sleeping in your blue sleep. If you live in a white room, my foot makes a rusty sound at your door. There's no part of me that can deliver you.
if you live anywhere in a black room, and the folds of your body are purple, and I visit you to work myself into your rhythm, dilute the colors until there is only white, no footfalls at the door. Now I'd like to read some of the Susan Quasha poems, the poems for Susan. May I say this, Susan? I asked her to choose the poems from the group that she liked best, or that seemed to be truest to her or closest to, in some way. She said, well, I'll give you the ones that made me cry most. That's the test. Anyway, if you have the hymnals with you, I don't know the pages, but if you have the book, I'm going to read one called The Road Down Goes Up, one called Gossamer, and one called Blue Pools. So if you have the book, you can see the pictures to which they're speaking and at the needs of which they are, in a sense, praying to make sense. The road down goes up. Everything is going to the sky. That seems to be the secret. Heraclitus to Heidegger, they all seem to say so. There is a road that goes there, a line to follow, trees and other sentinels assert the way. To say the way is to protect it. We go as far as we can. That is who we are. We are the ones who go as far as we can. We follow any tree. A tree is what Dasein actually says or sings. Men argue about whether there's anything on the other side of the sky, some other sort of being or being. But we keep going. This picture grows lighter as you look at it. The dawn is coming. Make sure we get there in time. Or sunset. Only fools think there is a difference. It is the same light, constantly growing. Wherever you look, already the trees are all behind you. And this is a longer sequence called Gossamer. And it spoke from one piece, one photo, but speaks to a number of others. Hard gossamer, the brittle air, leafless branch enmeshed in God's own crinoline, detected. This is a man's heart. A man like me, half wood, half will, a greenish kind of red. You suck my blood. Freemasonry of being touch. The eye that saw this image is inside a man, sees the pretty cobwebs of my appetites, a flyless web bereft of predator, cotton candy caught in amber sympathy. It knows I want to get sticky with you, whoever you are. Who saw this waiting, calling, wanting in the woods? It knows. It knows what I want. It rebukes me for my shtick. I invented something no one wants, a word instead of a loaf of bread. But it leads me everywhere. In the murk of ordinary seeing, leads me to love. My vague persuasion, my broken stick. Gravity determines how I look at you, even the eyes of a level. Pnei Hayam, the plain of earth, of the sea. I want to look at you where my eyes are. Touch nothing, leave it to the air. So we sat down and thought about it. Air is a mineral, what you show behind the trees is a kind of polished stone, tourmaline we breathe in, colors flourish us. Water is a mineral too. We turn into each other. Hair of the air, the light around the skull from which the thought disseminates throughout the world and through which it feeds, hair of the great trees. But a stick is nothing with a hand to hold it. Desire is the mineral in which the animal moves. Tourmaline problems the whole earth, a dirty pebble. You snug into your pocket. One look and then, how hard it is to find the world again. But it is geometry at last, shows gravity the way to go. Down where the dogs are, down where the unborn children please us, tease us in our sleep, down where Ariadne dries her tears for Theseus and rises higher. Love affair with a god, the twice-born, whose juices surge through man and tree. Now comes blue pools. Light misbehaving. Light you took our things away. Not even their shadows are to hand you. Left us just yourself and not much of that. Your radiance all umbered and all the brilliancy condensed to three blue pools. Color of the square halos of Byzantium. Dignity of devils. Every being, bad or good, has its own glow. The dark keeps answering. And then I see it could be woman, could be rocked loins, could be breasts, the parts of promise, shimmer pools, becoming the dawn sky, and stormlight at the margin, margins of desire, margins of thought. And we remember the great poet who sailed past us 2 dozen years ago into the luminous uncertainty, strange light, light misbehaving, yellow-green light of earthquake and Golgotha, that a woman stands in darkness, firm against equivocation. What can they be who speak to me? Look longer, set the buried caverns free, impersonate wall, and all time is burined in my hide. The great poet I mentioned there is Robert Duncan, his phrase I quote. And then the last piece, very small one, I can find it, The Theory. If you saw a color and opened it up, you'd find another color, and inside that, another, and on, and never find the sky. We are already on the inside of the sky. What we see are the reflection patterns of our tears, the smudges of words on feelings left.
So what I really wanted to say to Stephen, what I really want to say is about poetry always, is about architecture, I mean music, yes. How can I tell them apart? I'll try. How they use us to make us become ourselves. What I really wanted to say is about poiesis. The Greek verb poiein means to make. So anybody who makes anything has to be a poet. So when we were evicted by spirit from the caves, we moved into houses, structures built by the first poets, the architects. Isn't the house the first thing we really made? So poetry and music make time pass, and architecture makes space pass into meaningful form. No, I mean architecture makes music stand still. That's more like it. Here time turns into space. Impossible. Mm-hmm. Space and place, can they be the same?
Place happens to space. Is architecture in a place, or does it make the place itself happen to space? The way music happens to time. So there is usually a street and sometimes a fountain or a thing that moves up and glistens while the eye reaches out and out. And there's a girl walking by and another eating lunch on a bench, because a place is a plaza. But what I really want to say is that the poem stretches on and on like an avenue of mysterious buildings. Who on earth lives in all those houses, apartments, single rooms? Who climbs down the stairs or stumbles at midnight? Who opens the brass letterboxes? Like God, who are all these people eating their lunch in the middle of a poem and looking at each other and wondering what it all means? And then they come to the end of a line and decide, well, enough of this, it's time to go home. Home to their room, home to their own place. What I really wanted to say was that the word room really means space, like German Lebensraum, space to live in. Is there room for living in this poem you're writing, O poet, O composer? Are you leaving space in your music for someone to live in, really and truly, be alive inside your music? Not just some background noise, not just some sad background life while you drone on. I know it's not polite to ask, but we sort of know what architecture does. Rough and ready, we inhabit it, and when we're lucky, it changes us, guides our footsteps and the way we feel about doing whatever it is that we're doing that brings us there, swinking or swiving. A building holds all. So what I really wanted to say was that these arts do something to time as it goes by, not just make it pass, as Beckett had his sad loser say, that time will pass by itself, all right. Time knows how to do that. Well, that is all time knows. And do we know more? More than what music tells us as it flows past? We sit in the plaza on a marble bench and read poems to one another, whispering or waving our arms, and why not? Somebody has to make these things move, make the shadows dance in and out of the shadows of great buildings. But does time ever really pass? Isn't time just a superstition, a flaw in our attention to the permanent? And if time passes, can we learn how to stop it and make it pool out around us so that we stand or sit in the shallow water of moveless time? A static stream? Or time might be a fountain springing up and falling back, a salmon leap of time out into space, into room? So that when we see a building, we know that time is safe here, an artist's hour hammered into place, and we can be, just be. Has he turned time into space? What I really wanted to say was there and back again, the swell of music held in the mouth of a poem, spoken to the girl eating her lunch in the great nest of plazas of so many levels Stephen Hole built in China. A city in a city, a poem someone is reciting, annoying the poor girl eating her lunch. My God, how can I look at that plaza and not start writing a poem with musics and levels and fountains and food? It's hard work to eat, chewing and swallowing all the inward mysteries thereafter. Hard work, the poem and the song. Hegel infamously remarked, a building is a frozen song. Well, yes, but everything is. What I really wanted to say was that everything approximates music, but a building is exact, demands space move its hips and shoulders this way, not that way. Or is architecture also a chance for music, turning space into space, so that we can get lost for a long time in a long song, corridors and pentagons and Moorish geometries, the way John Cage's 433 turns time into time. Our dear Christless fundamentalist, our sweet, raw, redneck Pythagoras, daring to turn common time into pure time, time transmuted by attention. He'll never let us be sure if he was the great alchemist or the Wizard of Oz. But the time changed and stays changed. He moved on to the next town and left us with an empty room full of pure time. We shake our heads and say, next time we'll do better. We'll be ready for him and dance to his tune. But what does next time mean? Can there be another time after this time? That's where poetry comes in. And if quoting myself, I could say again, time transmuted by attention, a measured, noticed time, is as much music as Bieber's, the glorious whine of whose archaic strings won't leave me alone for a second. She looks up from her paper plate and hears the time singing round her ears, spoken by the shapes and shades of great buildings. And now she knows, and now she's only now. Can a poem, though, such as I'm trying to make, or bend your way now, can a man outlast time? Can it get where it's going before I get there? When I was a child, the greatest thrill was riding on the escalator. Macy's, Gimbel's, Wanamaker's, floor to floor, and always rising, and no one to stop even a child from going up, and watching people on the way down, watching bags, neat brown packages, content, descending into ordinary space, while I rose up, finally reaching the dim, cool floor where furs were sold. And I turned back from the fear of dead animals. What could it mean to live in a world where animals die and their skins rest on lovely women of a certain age? That's why we hurried down again to the ordinary floors, the street, the paper plates littering the gutter. She's closed her book now and gone back to work. The half-eaten sandwich, the poem read halfway through and never finished. But something was always going up, even if we didn't have the wit or will to endure its beauty. Like James Tenney's Electronic for Anne Rising, where the sound goes up and never stops that climb, but is always present. Or Joan Tower's wonderful Platinum Spirals, violin conquering time by rising always in one place. Or when the thunder walks through the valley and everybody and everything knows itself suddenly walk into by that sound, invaded, persuaded, frightened, spared. What I really wanted to say was that I'm tired of poetry being a blueprint and not a house. I'm tired of music being something that comes and goes. I want the word to be a house and the tune to be something you climb in and travel. But how can I say that? What I really wanted to say is, how can words make you hear? How can words make a poem be something made? Can it make a place you can actually walk around in, stretch out in, reach a wall you can lean against, warm in sunlight, and close your eyes? What I really wanted to say is that poetry wants to close your eyes so you open them suddenly in a new space, the way doors and windows do. Oh, these architects, these poets, who can build an opening wherever they choose, can open space and let us in. But can I break open even a single word to make you see?